I was super excited, but you know how many times we had negative after negative after negative. It was like, there's no way we can be pregnant. Like, this is just not going to happen. And that line started getting, we started seeing double lines day by day by day. And we just didn't want to celebrate yet. But when we found out, when those were two solid blue lines and the pregnancy said positive, we just bawled. And we just said, you know, we've been working on this for 4 years trying to have our family, and it was the best moment of my life.
This is Her Kind of Healthy, a podcast series by Sanford Health. The conversations highlight topics from fertility and pregnancy to postpartum, managing stress, healthy living, and so much more. In this episode, hear one couple's story about starting a family through in vitro fertilization. Our host is Alan Helgeson with Sanford Health News.
Being able to share stories and inspire hope and joy is important. When first meeting Polly and Nikki, their story has so much to share. And like all good stories, it has to have a beginning.
So Polly was like a really big volleyball star in high school. And when I was in high school, my team actually played against hers. And her senior year, she's from Pierre, and they were undefeated all season. And she was a senior and I was a junior. And from our high school in Rapid City at Stevens High School, we ended up beating them in the state championship. So that was like the first encounter. And to this day, she does not get to live that down. And so, yeah, we played volleyball in college together. And then, like she said, we were roommates and then became more than roommates and fell in love and, yeah, got married and had a baby.
So when you decided to start having those serious talks about having a family, was it hard to find the resources or figure out how to go about doing that?
So I had always just imagined like a really traditional way of being able to start a family. So when her and I fell in love and when we got together, we really had to sit down and think about like which avenue we would want to take in order to have a family. We knew that we wanted to, in a perfect world, use like a sperm donor. So what we actually did with Theo was we had Polly get her eggs ready. So we kind of like split the IVF process together. So Polly had her eggs retrieved for the IVF process. And then those eggs were created, like the embryos were created with her eggs and the sperm donor. And then those were put into me. So like Theo would not have been able to exist without either of us put together, which is like what we were really hoping for in a perfect world.
Okay, so at what point did you go to Sanford and say, hey, here's what we want to do. We want to start a family.
So once me and Nikki decided that that's what we wanted to do, we started at Sanford Health because I believe that they're the only fertility clinic in the whole state of South Dakota. So we're very, very blessed that they're nearby. And we can ask for the better doctors. So we kind of went back and forth. And from the very start, we just worked as a team and they said, we're going to get you guys through this.
At Sanford Health, Dr. Keith Hansen and his team are part of a larger group of specialists in women's health.
I'm what's called a reproductive endocrinology and infertility specialist, which means that we take care of hormonal issues and some other issues, like to try to help couples to achieve their dream of starting a family and having a baby.
With your clinic and your expertise, you're very specialized in what you do. So where do your patients come from and how do they hear about your services in your clinic?
Our patients usually are referred to us. Sometimes they come as primary, they make an appointment to come in and be seen. But a lot of times they're referred to us either by their family medicine doctor or by an OBGYN. And we then evaluate them once they come to see us. And then we do get couples to just hear about it and call and make an appointment so they don't have to have a referral to be seen. In general, usually when we have couples who are trying to get pregnant, one of the things we really want to do is try to help them conceive with the least invasive process that's available to us.
For Nikki and Polly, they had to navigate other changes as well.
I also have PCOS, so I have polycystic ovary syndrome. And that means that, like, my hormones are just, like, imbalanced in my body, which can make it harder for, like, my lining to get really good. So when we started IVF, we had Polly's eggs retrieved, but my lining couldn't get thick enough to put the embryos in. So we had to actually freeze the embryos that we had until my body could get where it needed to be to hold the embryos.
And that was a long process.
That was a really long process. Yep. A lot of, like, sailed mm-hmm. rounds of trying. We hadn't put any embryos in at that point.
Yep, and it got to a point where we were very frustrated, so we just had to take, like, a year off.
Okay, so for Nikki and Polly, having patience is important and working with the right team is key.
So we started with our fertility doctors.
Dr. Hansen, can you please talk about the IVF process?
Usually for in vitro fertilization, first we have to do testing so we can figure out the best medications and all that kind of stuff. Then the first part of the process is ovulation induction, where we're giving her medications to stimulate the ovary to try to make more follicles to grow. And so what we do is we start the shots, and the gals have to take shots a couple times a day, I'm afraid. Once the follicle gets to a certain point and her estrogen's at another point, we have to start her on even another medication to try to prevent her from ovulating. And once the follicles get up to a mature size, which is about 18 millimeters in diameter, then we give a shot called the HCG, a trigger shot, which completes the maturation of the egg and starts a process of ovulation. Then 36 hours after that, we take the eggs out. And the way we do that is we go back to a little room in the back here that's attached to our laboratory, and anesthesia comes down, puts the person asleep so they don't feel what we're doing. Once we're asleep, we can clean the vagina with saline, put a vaginal probe ultrasound, and this ultrasound has a little aiming guide on it. So we put a needle down through there, we go through the top of the vagina, and we just kind of pop into the follicle. Then it's attached to a pump, pumps the fluid into a test tube. We take the test tube off, hand it back to the guys in the lab. They're sitting under a big microscope that's heated. They pour out the fluid, find the egg, and put it in the incubator. And we do it for the ones on one side. Then we go over and do up all the ones on the other side. Then we take everything out and then wake her up. And then the lab gets the eggs ready, which probably takes them about 4 hours to do. They get the sperm ready, which takes about 4 hours to do. And then depending on the sperm, they either put 100,000 sperm right on top of the egg, or they do what's called ICSI, where they go in, find a normal sperm, pick it up, and inject it into the egg. Then they put it back in the incubator. And the next morning, we get to see, did it fertilize normally or not? And those that fertilize then can develop. And we want them to get up to what's called the blastocyst stage. So what we do is once we have the blastocyst, which usually takes 5, 6, or 7 days, then we can put it back into the uterus.
With any medical procedure, there are always things to watch for, and why Dr. Hansen and his team have many safeguards in place.
There's a number of risks associated with the procedure. The biggest one is multiple babies. And we like to follow the American Society of Reproductive Medicine guidelines, which tell us how many to put in to give us the least risky pregnancy and the most likelihood of a live-born baby. And for most women under the age of 35, it's usually one embryo. For those 35 to 40, it's one or two, but no more than that. And it depends a little bit on a number of other factors, but it's usually one, sometimes two, between 35 to 40.
Are there organizations that you work with to help make sure you're providing the best care possible?
We're closely monitored by, you know, a number of different agencies. The FDA, the pathology group follows us closely, the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, and then we maintain certification and board certification so that we can provide the optimal care to our patients to reduce their risk and improve the chances of a healthy baby and a healthy mom.
So typically an IVF process from beginning to end is not as complicated as mine was, but I had a lot of hiccups along the way.
Yep.
When Dr. Hansen talked about the IVF process, the steps were a bit different for Nikki and Polly.
In this situation, what we did was what's called reciprocal IVF, where we stimulate the one individual's ovaries through ovulation induction meds. We take the eggs out, then we fertilize them. And then what we do is we prepare the other person's uterus to accept the embryo. Then we thaw out the embryo and put it in, and then hopefully she gets pregnant, which in this case she did.
Is it common to do it this way, Dr. Hansen?
It's more common than it used to be. I'd say that the more common way is a lot of people decide to do the intrauterine insemination just because IVF is so much to go through. But there are a group, and it's becoming a larger group of patients where they want to use like reciprocal IVF, where we stimulate the one, fertilize the eggs, then put the embryo in the other person. And it really does, you know, it's kind of a cool way to expand a family and have a little baby.
I was super excited, but you know how many times we had negative after negative after negative. It was like, there's no way we can be pregnant. Like, this is just not going to happen. And that line started getting, we started seeing double lines day by day by day. And we just didn't want to celebrate yet. But when we found out, when those were two solid blue lines and the pregnancy said positive, we just bawled. And we just said, you know, we've been working on this for 4 years trying to have our family, and it was the best moment of my life.
So we started with our fertility doctors, and they helped to get us little baby embryos that we were able to work with from the beginning. And then as soon as I got pregnant and we graduated from like the fertility mm-hmm. doctors, then we went to Dr. Kemper.
Oh, and man, is she's awesome. She is just the best.
She's amazing.
She's amazing.
She was our OBGYN. Mm-hmm. And she, so then really after you graduate from the fertility doctors, it's like a normal pregnancy, right? So then you just have like a normal baby doctor.
For Polly and Nikki, their journey to starting a family has been anything but normal. So at what point did you learn that it was a high risk pregnancy?
Because it was IVF, that's what labeled us as a high risk pregnancy. But yeah, we just had like a normal, mm-hmm. a normal experience from that at that point. And then at my 20-week scan, that's when they do like the anatomy scan, we found that my cervix was shortening and funneling, which is a sign of labor. Like, you can be going into labor soon. And I was only 20 weeks at that point. So they had to put in a cervical stitch. So I remember at that 20-week appointment, they were like, you could have a baby within the next couple of weeks. And we were like, that can't happen.
This is where the expertise of Dr. Rachel Rodel and her team comes in.
Sanford Health as a whole has a vast team of experts to help people start families and to help them be successful in their journey. Fortunately, with Sanford, we have multiple avenues for patient care, including certified nurse midwives, family medicine physicians, OBGYNs, and us as maternal fetal medicine subspecialists. So we take care of patients really once they're pregnant or if they're planning a pregnancy. And then, of course, for those who might need extra support in starting a family, we're fortunate to have the reproductive endocrinology and infertility specialists.
For Nikki and Polly, this level of care was important with their pregnancy.
Often what we see here in maternal fetal medicine is when pregnancies get unique. So for any patient who might conceive by IVF or in vitro fertilization, they are typically referred routinely to a maternal fetal medicine specialist at the time of their anatomy ultrasound, around 20 weeks, to have a little bit more in-depth look at the baby due to risks associated with the IVF process. But for them, some unexpected findings on the typical screening ultrasound led our team to stay involved. And if we fast forward a short time after that, our team became even more involved as her pregnancy progressed.
So I remember at that 20-week appointment, they were like, you could have a baby within the next couple of weeks. And we were like, that can't happen.
With the physical challenges during this time, the mental stresses weigh heavy too.
I felt a ton of pressure, like emotional pressure to like be perfect all of the time when I was pregnant. Cause it's like, if I do anything wrong, like I'm gonna ruin this pregnancy. So
and I think that's for every pregnant woman. There's mm-hmm. There's a lot of pressure it's like they feel like it's your job to make their family. Everything's on you. You have to do everything perfectly. And
when you've never been pregnant
yeah,
before,
it's scary.
It's like, is this normal? Is this
right.
not normal?
Scary.
So let's go a few weeks down the road. Okay, 24 weeks, 5 days, emergency delivery.
Ugh, you'd think he would be able to, like, get through it after telling the story so many times. Okay, so the night before the emergency C-section happened, I had felt pressure in my vagina, and they came and did, like, a pelvic exam, and they said everything looks good. Theo was, like, reading normal on, like, the fetal monitor. There was, like, I had the cervical stitch in, so they said if you were dilating at all, there would be blood. Like, everything looked good. So they had just said, like, no concerns at this point. So we said, okay. So I woke up that next morning, and I went to the bathroom. It felt like my vagina was falling out with me. I had called Polly into the bathroom, and I said, this is not normal. And so we called the nurse in, and she's like, let's get you into bed. And I said, what is this? And it was this umbilical cord that was falling out of me. They say, so, like, when you're in, like, when you're waiting and you're in bed rest, they talk to you and they say, I hope that you never have to experience an emergency C-section, but if you do, it's like a beautiful symphony. It's like everybody comes in and they all have their roles, and it's just like a flawless, beautiful symphony. And there's really no other way to describe it. Like, they pulled the cord, people came in, they took my clothes off, they put me in a gown. So they wheeled me out, and I had a nurse, and I just grabbed her hand, and I said, is he going to live? Is he going to be okay? And she said, she's like, we're going to get him out of there. You have to stay calm right now and, like, not give yourself anxiety with everything else that's happening. And it was really urgent to get him out of me, because with his umbilical cord falling through, that's cutting off oxygen to him. So we go into the emergency room, and they put me on the bed, and one person's at my head, and she's saying, do you give consent to be put out? And I said, yes, just save my baby. And there's a person, like, down below. And she's just, like, sticking a catheter in. And the surgeon comes in, and they have to time the procedure perfectly because they're putting me under general. Like, they're knocking me out completely. Normally with a C-section, they can give you, like, an epidural kind of. And, like,
paralytic, yeah.
Yeah, and they needed to just put me out completely. There was no time. And so they're, like, scrubbing my stomach up, and the person by my head is saying, are you ready for her to be put out? And the surgeon's saying, nope, not quite ready yet. And then I have somebody holding my hand, and they're looking for the heartbeat. And I said, is there a heartbeat? Is he alive? And they couldn't find one. And so they're getting ready to, like, put this mask on my face. And I said, stop, is there a heartbeat? And they said, yes, we have a heartbeat. I said, okay, put me under. And so then they said, are you ready to be put under yet? And the surgeon said, almost, we're almost ready. And so then she said, okay, we're ready. And so then just like that, I was out.
Everybody left and I was by myself. Dropped to my knees, praying to God. I had a rush of peace over my heart, and then from that moment, I knew that everything's gonna be okay. And then I went and saw him for the first time, and it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And he was kicking, and he was sassy, and we actually got to have a delayed cord clamping because he was such a fighter. And ever since then, he's been a fighter and just kicking butt in the NICU and dodged so many bullets, and God's just held us in our hands.
Baby Theo is born, 1 pound, 8 ounces. Now begins a new chapter in their story, a 120-day stay in the neonatal intensive care unit at Sanford USD Medical Center in Sioux Falls.
He was going to have to go to the NICU regardless. Like, if he would have been inside of me and stayed until 34 weeks, we knew that that was going to happen. We just didn't know how sick he was going to be when he was in the NICU. His first week, they say that, like, the baby is going off of the hormones that I had provided for him when he was inside of me. And it's like a honeymoon stage. So the first week, he was great. And then after my hormones, like, kind of leave his body and it's up to his little body to be like, whoa, what, like, I got to do this on my own. That's when reality sets in. And so it's like, you feel like just this sense of, like, desperation and like panic, because it's like, is this like all that you can do? And
I don't think I've ever prayed more in my entire life. Just like out of just pure desperation of like, just I'll do anything. Just pleading. Like save my baby, you know? So I think that was like really hard, is just feeling like hopeless and just feeling like you don't know what's going to happen. And they can't promise you that he's going to live, right? Like I kept asking the nurses, I would be like, he's going to live, right? And they would say like, we've got really good doctors, and they would say like, we've got a really good team. And they would say like, he's just doing what preemie babies do. But nobody could ever tell me like, yes, he's going to live, because you can't promise that to families. And you just so desperately want somebody to just say, he's going to make it. He's going to be okay. But you can't. So you just have to like hold on to your faith that everything is going to make it. And
just seeing your little guy hooked up to that many things is just the hardest thing to look at. So
yeah. Those nurses deserve like all of the good in the world. They are not only medically taking care of your child, but then they're like counselors to you. And
they become like your family.
4 months in the NICU. Can you speak to what this was like for you and Polly?
They say the hardest part about being in there is the beginning and then right at the end. Because at the end, it's like he looks like a baby. He's doing so good, but like you can't go home yet. And then he's like big enough where he just wants to be held. And he just, like when he's really little, he's just on a machine and he's sedated. Like when he's big enough, he's crying out, and you want to see him and you want to love him and you want to hold him. You can't take him home, and you're at work, right? Like you can't just be in the NICU 24/7. So that was also a really challenging part, is you still have to live NICU life with mm-hmm. that was really hard too, because
we're at home with him, and he's just the best boy, and he's so happy and he's laughing, and we finally get him to see he's actually acting like a baby, which we were waiting for so long, and we just love him so incredibly much.
I would do all of that over a million times if this was like the result of it.
In your journey, you guys have learned so much. So with your experiences, are there things you could share that might be helpful to others from your time in the NICU?
And so I think like finding your community is helpful.
Like our NICU neighbor.
Our NICU neighbor.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Anyways, and then talking to her, her child right next to us has gone through the same thing Theo has been. And so that was really helpful talking to her. And I think just like, it's helpful to find your community. And also like, things might be really, really dark at the time and really, really tough, but like, things are going to get better. It's going to get better. It just takes time. And you might be in the darkest place of your life, but Sanford's there to help you. The nurses are, the doctors are, your family is, but it does get better.
Dr. Hansen, you and your team have had such an important role in helping Nikki and Polly start a family. Why is it important that Sanford Health provides these services, your services, and those that your peers provide for LGBTQ+ families seeking care?
For any couple that wants to have a baby and wants to expand their family, the services at Sanford are here to supply care to patients from all walks of life to meet their dreams, to expand their family, and to stay up all night. Just kidding.
So what does it feel like for you, knowing you're helping people become parents?
It's incredibly satisfying and rewarding to have a couple bring in their little one. I originally was in the Navy back when I first started, and I learned that one of the first kiddos that I helped her mom get pregnant with, his father was a Navy SEAL. The only thing he wanted to go into was the Navy SEALs. And I learned that he actually made it. He's now been in, I think he's probably getting ready to retire from it, but he was a Navy SEAL for quite a while, which is kind of cool, you know, to be able to talk to him. And some of the kids are playing baseball, and it's just really fun to see what they do with their lives. And
Dr. Rodel? What's it like for you?
You know, it's a great feeling to see the successful outcomes, such as with sweet baby Theo. Given with what we do and sometimes the very unfortunate circumstances that we see, we really know that not all cases have such a happy ending. And it really is a privilege to support families, both in their grief and in their celebrations. And of course, it's an incredible joy when patients can graduate from our care, don't need us anymore, and you know, sometimes bring us their sweet baby or babies to show off, because some days can be really tricky, and this is always a challenging time in people's lives to support pregnancies. So it's quite an honor to help families through the process.
And for their part, Polly and Nikki are grateful for the medical team who helped them along the way as they begin their new chapter in their life together.
They are the story. They are our beginning, our middle, and our end, and our family at the end of the day, even when we're home. So they are our complete story, and they saved his life, and they helped us have a baby and our family. It's just been an awesome journey with Sanford. And of course, couldn't get through this without God too. So a lot of praying and a lot of good team is what made this happen possible.
Okay, so what's the best part of this whole experience?
Theo, that's just it. He's just of our whole world.
Watching her be a mom is a very close second.
You're making me cry.